Hey, thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode of the Chicago Gametrepreneur Show. For our first-time listeners, we're a show all about helping indie games in Chicago, whether it's providing advice for new creators or showcasing the awesome stuff that's going on. We're really about just promoting and helping the indie community. If you want to help us out, please subscribe, rate, and review. And don't forget to check out our Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Chicago Gametrepreneur, and our Twitter at CGSPod. We'll be posting some great offers from our local sponsors. We have a new sponsorship with Unruled Notebooks and some excellent offers from Basecamp. Hope you enjoy the episode. All right, welcome to episode 26 of the Chicago Gametrepreneur Show. As always, we are sponsored by the Unruled Notebook. It's a notebook designed for visual thinkers, and it's eco-friendly. Every three Unruled Notebooks sold will result in one tree planted. If you go to their site, beunruled.com, you can use the code CGS10 for a discount on these great products. Hey. Okay. And our guest today is Ross. And we're just talking about
Shubilski.
This. How do we say your last name?
I think I heard it right there. Yes. It's Shubilski. Yeah. It's one of those names that is just sort of like become my icebreaker now. And, I tend to start, in my presentations when I do talks now, I've just gotten to the point where it's become commonplace to use this little three symbols. My brother, he's a DARE officer in Romeoville, and what he does for the kids, I kind of stole from him. He says, shh, like puts his finger up to his mouth, like quiet, you know, shh. And then Bill, he's got his hand out, like kind of doing the money thing, like, yeah, money. So Bill, and then Ski, and he does like the dance. Like he's, uh-huh. So that's how you remember Shubilski.
Great. And we should point out that you are a Chicago alumni. You were in Chicago doing indie game stuff. Now you're out in Salt Lake City.
That's
is
right.
That right? But we're happy to support your very cool project, Summer's Fate, your new Kickstarter. So maybe you can just give our audience a little background on, you know, the concept and the idea.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. First off, it's an honor. I'm so glad you guys reached out, and it's great to be here talking to you.
So great to have you.
Really appreciate it. I had to say that. So Summoner's Fate, the idea of the game is, I created it. It's a spiritual successor to my first game that I actually showcased back in Chicago, Hero Mages. And the premise of the game is really about taking a passion for tabletop miniature-based war games like Warhammer or board games like HeroQuest, and combining that with my passion for CCG games like Magic, and creating an experience that fans of these genres can play and consume quickly on their mobile device or PC, if you will, because it supports both. But really the idea is about just, again, giving that experience. As you grow up, you have a family, you have kids, it becomes harder and harder to find.
Speak for yourself.
Non-interrupted. Yes, well, I have a hard time, and many folks do, with being able to reconnect with those memories, playing classic Dungeons and Dragons with your friends, or playing a 2-hour game of Warhammer. These are all things I look back fondly on. I wish I could do that stuff again. But I mean, really, when I look at my time and day, I've got lots of pockets of, you know, maybe 5 minutes throughout the day, but I don't have 2 or 3 hours of dedicated time very much anymore. So this is about bringing that, taking those experiences and delivering it in a way that people that have that kind of similar schedule can still enjoy those experiences.
Yeah, I know for me that I have a group that I used to play D&D with first in person, and then everyone moved to different corners of the globe. And then, you know, we're working on a technical solution, right, where we play through a online service, but you know, it's still hard, right? It's still, you know, you have to sit down and give up 4 hours on a weekend or a Sunday morning or something. So I do like the idea of having that tabletop experience, but without having to do all the coordination and the setup, right? So
yeah, absolutely. And it's not meant to be a replacement for those games. It's meant to be like the game between games, you know, like mm-hmm. something where it's like, I've got 5 minutes.
Right, where you just have that, yeah. that itch, right, where you're like, oh man, I need my fix.
Exactly. D&D. Yeah.
So you're in the midst of a Kickstarter right now. What phase are you at? How far are you into it?
So we are. We've got 14 days left. We started it just about 8 days ago. Like not this week on Monday, but the week before that. So I think we're running for a total of, I think we'll be just about four weeks when it's said and done. Mm-hmm. So about halfway through right now, maybe a little less than halfway through. And so far we're at 88% of our goal, which is
That's
pretty awesome.
A good place to be halfway through. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think at that level, it's like you have like a 99.9% chance.
Oh,
of getting
I like
funded.
Those odds. I can play those.
Yeah. First of all, I want to say that it's a really great Kickstarter. You've got a ton of info, great mm-hmm. graphics, just a really like detailed explanations on the systems and the different rewards in the game. How long did it take you to set up, and any advice you have to people who are kind of like maybe they're thinking about doing a Kickstarter now that you're kind of like through this process and you're actually live?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The Kickstarter, it's a collaborative project. My wife and I both have been working together on it full time. Mm-hmm. To give a context of the number of hours, we spend on average about 80 hours a week apiece. And then in the last week, we had to scramble to put the trailer together because we actually didn't have the trailer done. We were trying to do this whole music competition to try to attract interest, and also kind of a cool thing to showcase like different music artists with different talent and then have our community brought in to vote. So we didn't have the winner decide until Friday, and the Kickstarter was launching on Monday.
Wow.
So that was pretty intense. We probably worked, from about 7 in the morning until 2 o'clock every night to get that trailer all finished and put together in time to launch the Kickstarter. So
do you feel like it was worth it? Was the interest you generated from the contest, did that make a dent, or do you know?
Yeah, the contest. Yeah, the contest was really interesting. We had some doubts about it, to be honest. I put it out there. I did research beforehand. The whole contest for the music was inspired by the idea that I had – I want to say about 40 different musicians independently reach out to me in the time since I started blogging about the game's development. And I hadn't really spent a lot of time to think about music because we just had so many other priorities, but I always had the back of my mind. And finally I thought, you know, wow, we've got so many people interested. This would be a great way to kind of get a nice public, appearance in terms of marketing and getting people excited about it. And it hadn't been done before. I mean, I did a lot of looking, and there's not really a lot of music contests out there for, you know, indie game musicians that are working on wanting to get in the game industry. So I thought, you know, this would be great. And at first we were a little hesitant because I got back some emails from people saying like, oh yeah, this is terrible, I would never do this, or, you know, like, and that kind of response, which is, you know, I guess it would be expected. But then I had just a whole bunch of emails coming after that. They were just like, this is so great, I'm so excited, I'm so pumped. And people were excited just to put something together, even though they didn't win. They still wrote back and said really nice things like, this was great, thanks for giving me a reason to go out and try like an instrumental type piece that would work great for fans game, because now I've got that in my portfolio. And it was one of our most successful events to date. It generated a lot of interest. We had more votes on it than anything we've had so far. And we had contestants from all over the world. That was the other cool thing. I wasn't expecting that. We had all over the world. I think our finalists were from, one was from Spain, one was from Australia, and I think one was from California.
Wow. Yeah, I'm of two minds about it, because like on one hand you're asking people to do free work, but on the other hand, like, you know, people can do that calculation for themselves of like, is this worth my time? And it might, depending on someone's situation in their life and career, it might be worth their time even for free. I mean, clearly a lot of people thought that was the case.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe a little about your winner, the guy that did win it.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So the winner, he was from Spain. His name was Albert Fernandez. And what we really liked his piece, and I and he also won the popular vote amongst our community as well. And what I think spoke to us about it was that he really clearly spent a lot of time listening or like watching the game videos and kind of picturing his head what the game was about. And he went for something different, and that's what I really liked about it. We were hoping with the contest that one of the cool things would be that the artist would kind of look at it, and instead of us telling you, this is what the game's about, this is what it's supposed to be, we wanted them to kind of tell us, like, this is what I see in this, this is what I think it is, because that speaks very, like, powerfully about the type of medium you're creating and what kind of impressions people see when they look at it. And I mean, I think he did a good job capturing that. It's not a game that's intended to be like a dark RPG or incredibly gruesome or anything like that. It's meant to be like, you know, a reliving of the fun moments kind of in your head. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to be quick and accessible. And it's also supposed to be kind of a little fun. And there's a little bit of quirkiness to it. And I thought that the song he put together was just a great representation. It had kind of like a fun opening to it. In the beginning, maybe it was a little bit like, too exciting. I would say it almost hits the threshold of like, it's like almost Disney friendly, but then it kind of brings it all in with this intensity. And it's like, yeah, no, this guy has nailed it. It was so fun making the trailer when we finally got it. And he was named the winner because it just putting the piece together, my wife and I were just going back and forth and just like, all right, here's my picture in the beginning. Just like this nice forest scene. And then when the beats start coming in, the bear runs at you in closet. It's like, oh, this is perfect. And it really spoke to us, and I think the community saw that too, because they also really, really liked that track, and yeah, it was quite exciting.
Very cool. So speaking of like the feel of the game, I really like the mechanic that you guys have is the game board is almost like you're looking into a box, right? Mm-hmm. Like a little box into the game world, and when you click on the characters, they actually look up at you.
Yeah,
which I think it's such a cool touch, right? Because it's a good way to indicate, you know, like, I have this character selected, but it also adds this feeling that you're, like, looking
into
the game.
It's almost Brechtian, like, you know, this, you can't forget that this is a game at any moment, which is, like, you know, I think that's great. There are so many people that are just, like, immersiveness at all costs, like, where they're reducing the HUD to nothing and doing all these things just to be more real, but that's not necessarily what's fun about the game. That's you know, a side goal that maybe has nothing to do with, you know, enjoyment.
Yeah, it was the challenge with that. I'm so glad you spoke to that. It's actually one of the feedback we get so much mixed feedback on the lookup phase. Actually, a lot of people turned off by it, which I'm like, really? And the reason we came up with that, we actually spent a lot of time developing the visual style. In fact, we're behind schedule because of it. I was hoping to launch the game by the end of this year, and that probably pushed us out close to a year worth of time to really get that right. Because with the top-down game, you're an uphill battle from the start. I mean, yeah, you don't really have a great way to see the characters or to connect with them. And what I was worried about was a game where all they saw was the top of heads. And if that's what all they saw, they're not going to really connect to like the epicness of, oh yeah, this is my orc champion over here, and this is my crazed fire elemental over here. It just kind of looked like a bunch of heads. And so having the characters look up really brought that, you know, connection, because you see the eyes and you connect with them emotionally. Mm. And it's also just sort of fun. And you've got that mechanic to it tied as well, where it's like, hey, I'm ready for orders. You tell me what to do. And yeah, we just thought that was a really fun way to do it.
I was going to comment on how it is a tough challenge, and like there's a lot of different approaches. You mentioned Hero, I've forgotten the name. It was another tile turn-based.
Oh, HeroQuest.
HeroQuest, yes, thank you. Uh-huh. And they did sort of a sideways thing. I think Hotline Miami is like straight up top down, like they did not stylize it at all in terms of the angle. And I really like the way you did like the sort of rock back on the heels thing, because it shows you like what's important about the character, which is generally sort of the front side of their body.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I like it. It contributes to the idea that like you're actually like manipulating this tabletop thing, right? I think you're doing the same thing with the cards, right? The cards kind of sit on the side of the table, and when you want to play one, you just kind of drag it in and do something with it.
Yeah, exactly. Like it makes you feel like you're actually like the way I describe it is if you've ever played those tabletop games, it's if you took your iPad and like a piece of glass and held it up over the table and the characters came to life looking up at you, that's the feel I wanted it to have. Like it's just like, yes, my little guys have all come to life. I tell them what to do. And
Star Wars Holochess.
Yeah, Star Wars Holochess. Man, I swear, one of our players is really big on this idea of like the augmented reality VR thing. And someday when I can afford to do like the 3D graphics and stuff that it'll entail, that may be its successor in a few years. We'll see. But the world perspective, yeah, we talked a lot about kind of what was the role of the player. We had a hard time. That was another big challenge, is like, who is the player? Is the player a character or is the player something else? Because the game's about, you know, expanding and diversifying and trying out different characters and different strategies. So in the world, actually, the player doesn't represent the character. They are this kind of deity-like entity. Like, if you could take the concept, the philosophical concept of fate, and turn that into a personified god being, that's who the characters think the player is, and that's why they look up to you. It's almost like, you know, command my destiny, the fates. You know, tell me what to do, inspire me with your commands. You know, kind of a thing.
Yeah, I remember that when I play Magic, I always think it, you know, like, because Magic is the same thing, right? You're kind of the guy in charge, but you're never kind of given an identity.
Yeah.
So I kind of visualize that you're a mage on this tower, and like you have these lands that you build in front of you, and these throw spells from the tower. Or something,
yeah,
like that. But
exactly.
So speaking of successors, this is your second indie game, right?
Yes.
So maybe talk about what you did for the first one, and then kind of what you learned going into this one from your first project, Hero Mages, right?
Oh yeah, sure. So Hero Mages was an interesting project. It was obviously the first game I'd ever done, and when I made that game, I did not know anything about making games. So it's that game started.
You're not the first one, right?
it's kind of like everyone's first story, I suppose. Not very original, but it started. I actually had not intended to make a video game. My intent was to make a tabletop board game, because that's actually what it was a board game. And I actually spent about a year working on it as such, taking it to different hobby shops. We actually play tested it in person with people, and the hobby stores would be generous enough to let us like set up shop there and just play the game, because we kind of engaged our customers a little bit, and we got lots of feedback and then iterated. But the problem at the time was like publishing a board game when you're just kind of doing this in the industry, unless you've got publishing experience or a publisher will support you. And we did reach out for support, but learned that, you know, market-wise, we didn't have a unique enough theme. It's like, well, you're competing with Dungeons & Dragons, you know, you're competing with Magic. This is not going to sit on the shelf well next to these giants that are next to you. So I said, yeah, that's probably a good point. So a friend of mine had encouraged me. He said, you know, you do software development for a living. Why not take those skills and try to make it into a game? And my initial impression was, I don't think I could do that, because there's just so much that goes into a game. And it was like he just kind of sent me emails throughout the day, and I would read them and be like, all right, you know what, I'm gonna figure this out. And I would just do these little challenges, and he kind of coaxed me into it. And then before you know it, I'm like 6 weeks in, I had read some tutorials on multiplayer, and we had like a little prototype server going. And so then a buddy of mine, he used to have a World of Warcraft guild, he would bring his friends in, and they would play my game while they were waiting for their raids to start. And that's how we built our first one.
Funny.
Yeah, it was like the game to play while you're waiting to play this other game. It was pretty fun. But yeah, so
a whole studio of just those games, like try and get, you know, Riot's attention and be like, we'll make the game while you're waiting for a match of LOL or whatever.
There you go. Yeah, because a lot of those things, right, they require a lot of people to sign up. You know, you got to get them all set up.
You're waiting out that 30 minutes to lose. You can just switch over and play the the waiting game.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good call. Yeah, it was fun. People enjoyed it, because it is a very like it's a serious game, but it's also one where in that game particularly, you didn't feel like bad to lose, because there's a lot of random elements. So when you lost, it's like, oh, it's the dice's fault. But when you win, oh, it's all my strategy that caused the win. So you never felt bad playing it. You always felt like you could always justify the loss and have fun when you win. So But back to your question about the learning experience. So I took that game concept, and it launched originally as an online game. Then about a year or two later, there was it's when mobile devices first came out. So, I mean, I was developing on like the iPad 1 and first generation iPhones and Android devices to make it on mobile. And we were one of the first cross-platform games to do what we were able to do on that. And that's what really led to its like success. And I say success in terms of indie, like it did well in terms of getting featured by Apple, by Adobe. We were part of a Sony feature with a competition they did. So it got a lot of notoriety and a lot of downloads and a lot of good feedback from players. And it did pretty well financially. But not enough to the point where I could, you know, quit my job and do this full time, which was kind of what I was ultimately hoping to do. And, you know, there was a few key learnings for that. The number one thing, if I could say one thing that would be the thing I would do different is I did not think about the long-term business of it. I kind of designed it as a one-time download, and there was a couple expansions. But beyond that, there was nothing to really continue your investment in the game. And it's a shame because we had such great engagement with it. And one of the hardest things with mobile games in particular is how do you keep people engaged and coming back? And in terms of that, like, people to this day still play it, which I'm amazed by because I haven't done anything in years to change it. But there's players that have over 2,000 plus hours that still play it. People tell me I downloaded my phone and keep downloading it. If I had thought about that and found a way to offer additional content and cards and things they could collect and continue investing in, then I think I would be set up pretty well to keep doing it. So that was one of the key things I learned.
Very cool. So in reading your Kickstarter, it does sound like you're trying to build more of that kind of almost a community or like game as a service type model for this if it's successful.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's our number one priority is to have the community directly involved in their development, to be listening to them and having an open dialogue, and then, you know, kind of letting the world of this evolve in the way that the players want. Because ultimately, it's for them. They're the ones that are playing it. I mean, I have a large stake in terms of the passion and desire I like to see in it. But what I like about it is that the people I'm trying to get to play it and trying to share it with are the ones that have similar interests. So we're kind of like this nice, awesome group of people that have similar mindsets of what we like to play. And so many of the greatest ideas I have come up with have been part of that collaboration. One of the biggest innovations in particular, the move system, which is one of our very unique things to our game, was the direct result of a early playtest with some of our Hero Mages players that helped me in the beginning with this. And I was trying to make the game more accessible and simple. And, you know, I showed it to them and they said, wow, it's simple, all right, but you kind of killed the whole thing we liked about the first one, which was all the tactics. Mm. And so then they gave me some suggestions and said, what if we allow you to take your finger and drag to control the movement? And that one little thing changed everything about what the game's mechanics could do, because suddenly now you had facing, the player could control, you had the direction of where they attack the other character. And then all kinds of different tactics that weren't possible even in the first game suddenly became doable in the new game. And it just made it better because of that collaboration.
Yeah, that's awesome. I really like that you kind of kept the audience and the engagement that you had on your first title and pulled it in to be part of this new title that you're creating. Even though it's not a direct sequel, right? You can still, you know, keep that community engaged.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It seems like the games have enough in common that it's likely that fans of Hero Mages will also be fans of Summoner's Fate.
Yes, I'm hoping so. Yeah, I think so. I think they will be.
So on the Kickstarter, you guys are doing a lot of things to promote and kind of get the word out on it. I see that you have a live stream scheduled coming up pretty soon here.
Yes,
what's been effective for you in terms of spreading the word and getting people involved and, you know, getting them to back?
Oh, excellent question. Okay, so probably the most number one thing that helps out is, directly reaching out to everyone we know. And I mean like a personal phone call, email, text, Facebook message. that's the number one thing is direct communication, because and even into the players as well. Anyone I can reach directly, that's been the most helpful, and that's where a majority of the support has come from. The other thing is just getting yourself out there with as many possible channels as you can. It's hard to say with certainty which channels are the most effective, because sometimes ultimately people will look at it, but they don't necessarily come from that channel directly. They kind of think about it and come back. I'm not a marketer, and I don't know a lot about marketing, and it's one of the weaknesses I have and one of the things I'm trying to really learn a lot about. But what I've been told is that the key to marketing is to show yourself, make sure people see at least three places. And you don't know which three they're going to pick, but if you get yourself out there enough places, it starts to become like a thing people see. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we're on literally every channel I can think of so far. If you've got more, let me know. But Twitter, Facebook, we've been starting on Imgur recently. We're using Kickstarter's own internal channels as much as possible. Mm-hmm. We go to at least three different blog sites. I've got a blog on TIG Source, the Indie Game Source. I started one on Touch Arcade recently. RPG Codex, I've got a bunch of people I'm talking to there. And really, it's just about taking your game, sending the message, talking in the format the audience expects. So we never try to like take our audience or take the audience away from other communities. That would be really bad practice. So I always just directly engage on whatever channel people are naturally on and share the content there so they can just consume it how they like. But I think that's the biggest thing, is really just having it out there in as many places so that it starts to become commonplace. Like people go, oh yeah, that game, where did I see that before? Oh, over here, you know?
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, we get a lot of indie developers working on, you know, their first couple titles on this show. And I do think that everyone, you know, struggles with marketing, right? We're all trying to figure it out. You're actually the first person that's brought up that, like, if you see it in three places, then it's kind of in your head, right? So I like that. I like that concept.
I love the feature that Kickstarter added, I think, after both of our projects, which is the Remind Me button. Because I constantly come across Kickstarters that I'm really interested in, but can't spare the time at the moment to go through the process of you know, looking at all the rewards and figuring out where to back it and all that. So just like simple Remind Me button, and then a week before the campaign is done, it reminds me. Or 24 hours before? I can't remember.
48. It's 48 hours. Now, 48 hours, yeah.
But yeah, I wish as creators, I don't know if this is true. As a creator, do you get to see how many people have pressed that Remind Me button?
I was just going to ask you that question. I don't know.
I don't think that they expose that. That would be a really great tool to know. Like, so you can
so helpful to know that
expect how much to expect in those last 2 days.
Yeah, I mean, because that's kind of make or break it time. I mean, unless you're, you know, 88% of the way after 2 weeks, right? It gets really exciting in those last 2 days.
I hope so. That's what we've seen.
Sure, ours will not be that exciting.
Yeah,
fate's willing. Yeah.
It's nail biting. The whole thing has been very. I mean, I'm so glad that we're at where we're at right now, because that just makes it a lot more comforting. But I swear, after that first day and just the pace it was going, it was just like, oh man, I don't know. You kind of put yourself on the line, just out there, and it's very intense, especially considering like the state of physical exhaustion you're in when you finally get it there, and then knowing that like you're just now starting the marathon, because you know 400 to 600 hours to prepare the campaign, it's even more intense to run it. I mean, it's 24/7 to run the campaign. You're like, I have people in other countries that want to come and ask questions. I don't want to be the kind of person that's like waiting too long to respond, you know, and yeah, constantly updating the article, the updates. It's a lot. It's a lot. Mm-hmm.
Have you?
But yeah, I think having like a really well put together Kickstarter, like when the first time I hit a Kickstarter, I want to see something well put together. And I think you guys have, you know, you said you spent a lot of time, and it's pretty apparent, because it's a really good looking Kickstarter that has a lot of things and a lot of explanation that, you know, I can really get into.
I really appreciate that. It means a lot to have you say that. Actually, it does.
Well, I think like a lot of indie devs, especially on their first Kickstarter project, right? And Kickstarter has become crowded and noisy. So you really do need a good Kickstarter page now to stand out. So a lot of indie devs will be like, oh, Kickstarter, you can't get any traction on it. But I think what you have to do is just going to be more effort. But I think as your game shows, it's possible for an indie game, a small indie title, to still do well on Kickstarter.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love the community on there. I think it's great. We've learned a lot from just studying a lot of other Kickstarter projects, connecting with other devs. Actually, I didn't mention that tip, but that is also something I think had dramatically helped us. I mean, I wouldn't have known to do the things we did in our campaign. Like you mentioned our custom UI and things like that. It never would have occurred to me to do things like create little scrolls or images depicting like the different Kickstarter specific things, like where's your budget going to, you know, make like a custom UI pie chart of that. I got a lot of those ideas talking to other devs, actually, and they were awesome in sharing what they had learned on their Kickstarters with me so that I could also be successful.
And yeah, I mean, that's what we're trying to do here, too. So,
yeah, it was my favorite part of it. The whole experience, just the connection with those other devs, honestly. That's, if I had to pick one thing that was my favorite thing about Kickstarter, it was that, like getting to talk to other devs, getting to talk to you guys, like sharing in this like experience that we've all kind of done and are learning from. That's empowering. It's really cool.
And
for sure.
Go ahead. Could you tell us a little bit about your team? You and your wife are the core of it. Do you have other folks doing other things for you, or, and what are, how do you share responsibilities for this? Like what roles do you play?
Sure. Okay. So, the core team is primarily my wife and myself. I do the development, all the programming development for the game, most of the game design, and my wife primarily handles our marketing, social outreach, community building efforts, a lot of the creative posts that you'll see on our Facebook or Twitter and things like that, like the character graphics. She creates all that stuff, which is pretty cool.
Why isn't she here?
I should get her. she's taking care of the kids right now. She's taking care of the kids. Yeah, that's the fun we balance. We've got two kids during this. I don't know. We must be crazy or something. But yeah, we've got two kids. I could potentially get her if you want to ask her some questions and
we'll set up a post.
Let's do it. If she's free, bring her on.
Yeah, I guarantee she'll have some very interesting things to say from her perspective. Because I mean, it wasn't her dream at the beginning, but it is now. It is now. So she does all that stuff. She actually contributes quite a bit to game design ideas and stuff. We had a Halloween thing come out recently. One of the favorite characters was this little creepy girl with a teddy bear that transforms into this banshee when she dies and then screams at you. That was all her idea, and it was a pretty awesome idea.
Go get her if she's free.
Okay, I will.
I hope you don't mind. I hope we didn't take you from something more important.
No, not at all. I was just doing what I always do, which is, you know, looking over social media and planning some marketing for tomorrow.
So how's it been? How's been, you know, running the whole marketing show 2 weeks into this Kickstarter been for you?
It's been a lot of fun. You know, the cool thing about the Kickstarter is it's sort of like we get to really showcase some really fun stuff. For example, like I think Ross said he was talking to you about like the Banshee character. You know, she was somebody we've had around for a while, and we're just like, let's save her for the Kickstarter because she's really fun. So, you know, we really get to showcase some of our really, really fun stuff we've been sort of holding out on, I guess.
You know? keep the good stuff in your back pocket, right?
Exactly. You know, and especially as we're kind of pumping up our numbers on, you know, reaching more people on Twitter, reaching more people on Facebook, we want to really hone in on getting it to the biggest audience that we can, of course.
So
it's been a lot of fun,
tips?
And also, I was just saying, it's been a lot of fun, and also it's been a blast really chatting and getting to know a lot of different people too. So.
Oh yeah.
So do you have any tips for people that would be doing this kind of outreach during a Kickstarter? Because, you know, we get a lot of game devs on this channel, but not a lot of people that focus on the social side. So.
Sure. Absolutely. I would say my biggest tip is just keep putting yourself out there. You know, don't be shy. I mean, sometimes I have ideas where I'm thinking, I don't know, is this a little too weird or a little too, you know, cute or a little too creepy, you know? And it's like, you know, just try it because there's so much noise on Twitter and everywhere. So there's, you may as well try it out. And oftentimes I am very surprised by what works and what doesn't. So you got, I would say just if when in doubt, just try things, of course, as long as it's, you know, within kind of your brand that you've set up for your company. Keep, you know, keep trying different things. Absolutely. That'd be my number one piece of advice. Don't hold back.
Kelly, could you tell us the story of D20 Studios from your perspective? We heard Ross say he was working on like a physical tabletop board game in his free time. And was sort of coaxed into doing it as a digital thing. When did you sort of get brought onto the team in earnest? And like, how did you react to Ross spending so much time on this?
Well, as far as the time, I never minded that. Even before I was on board, that was never a problem for me. I'm a huge believer in, you know, people have to follow their passions. And Ross has always been super passionate about gaming. Whether it was, you know, he had game nights and just playing different games. I mean, I was always really supportive of that. So the time was never an issue for me. But insofar as when I was brought on board, you know, I would definitely kind of step in here and there with Hero Mages, you know, so back in like 2009. Now, I worked full time. So, and
she came up with a name, by the way. Hero Mages is her name, for, and I love that title, by the way.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That was her.
Yeah, so I was definitely not nowhere near as hands-on as I am now. However, I did help out, like, when we would do, we went to Gen Con a couple times, and different, like, events we would do. You know, my background is in recruiting, so I was more than comfortable to you know, say, come on over to our booth and try out this awesome game. That was not a problem. So I did a lot with him with that, and, you know, I would give him opinions here and there, of course, especially when he feels stuck. But I was definitely a little more, I would say, hands-off with Hero Mages, other than the occasional opinion. And then with Summoner's Fate, you know, when it was obvious that this is, you know, he quit his job with EA, this is what he was going to be really passionate about, I was like, let's do it. You know, we're going to go all in, let's go big or go home kind of thing. You know, I honestly didn't have a huge background in marketing. Again, my background was in recruiting and maybe like a little sales. I took some business classes in college, but it wasn't hugely my background. So I just worked really hard to learn. I made a lot of mistakes in the beginning. And that's kind of where I found my niche, was just sort of taking what we had, you know, the really cool images we had, the cars that we had, different things that we had, and trying to just create marketing pieces to reach people. And that sort of became my area that I could help out with, because I certainly can't do the programming. So it's a little beyond me, but marketing was somewhere I could really help out. And I knew he needed that. He needed somebody who can, while he was stuck in the, you know, the dark room typing and computing and coding, he needed somebody to really kind of be out there and communicating with people. So yeah. I stepped in.
It's, as Kiwan was saying, it's a part of the game development team that a lot of people on this podcast, including the hosts, are often missing. So
yep, guilty that's awesome. Yeah. In the interest of not making this too long of a pod, we have a couple reoccurring segments that we like to play with our guests. So if you're all set, we'd like to get into we call it the speed round.
Ooh, sounds fun.
So, questions for both of you, and I will.
So far, it has never been super speedy.
Yeah, yeah.
maybe we can do that.
It's speed round with quotations around it. So we'll give you a quick question to answer, and then if you don't have anything, you can always say flip and turn it back on us, and we'll have to respond with something.
Okay.
Ooh, all right. Cool.
So you right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. First question, how many cups of coffee do you consume while programming/marketing per day?
Two.
Two seems pretty standard. Good answer. Music. Is there any type of music that you prefer to listen to while working?
For me, it's disco.
Wow. That's Kelly, the first time we've had disco.
Woo!
I like what Kelly likes, but I'd also add alternative rock and that kind of stuff I like.
Very nice. First game that you remember playing?
The Tower of Doom on Intellivision.
Very nice.
One of my earliest memories playing games. Yep.
Yeah, I say Super Mario for me.
That's a classic.
Yeah. A Duck Hunt, right?
Game that you are most ashamed of not having played. So this is like your game debt. Like what game you're most ashamed that you might have bought or you might have said, I need to play that, and you just haven't gotten to it.
Oh, man.
I think we should flip.
Yeah, let's flip that one. That's where you use our flip on that one.
This one always comes back to me. I will say that I have been meaning to play the new Wolfenstein game, not the one that just came out, the one before it.
Okay.
And my goal was to play it before the new game came out, and I missed that deadline too. So I feel terrible about it.
Oh, burned.
Last time I said Ico, but this time I'm going to say Popo EO. Because I actually own Popo EO, but I have not even cracked it. So
I like it. I yeah. think that one
so, so much of our game debt shame just out in the public now. Desert Island game. And the way we played this is that you're on a desert island, but for some reason it has this amazing
connection.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, Desert Island game would definitely be something with a level editor. I would go with StarCraft because I think I've spent so much time in that game and you can create levels. If you get bored, you make your own game out of it. It's awesome.
Good answer.
Yeah, I'd probably say Diablo.
Diablo
for me.
Yeah, Diablo's a good one.
I just come back to Diablo.
So apparently the island is owned by Blizzard.
Yes.
Yeah.
Blizzard's, they'll be in good company.
We are Blizzard
fans. It's called Island, but it's our home.
So, and our next segment is called the What We're. And this is just what we're consuming as creators, right? What inspires us? And we try to do something that's pretty recent. So I can get it kicked off. I've been consuming a lot of Stranger Things. I kind of binge it out over the weekend.
Jealous.
So great stuff.
We can't wait. We're excited. We haven't had a chance yet, but we're excited to consume that as well.
Yeah. Let's see. So I would say, actually, this is a hard one. As of late, I honestly can say it's been really hard to consume anything because we've been
writing so much down. Yeah, I get it.
But I will speak to some recent things that strike my mind that were inspiring. So one game in particular that I really think back on is Braid, the platformer by Jonathan Blow, about time travel or manipulating time. And what inspired me about it was his ability to tell story in not so many words, and to tell that story in a really like powerful way. When you beat the game and you realize what the heck just happened, and you go on the forums and you spend 2 days after you beat the game reading all the forums about what actually just happened. That's like the pillar for me of what I would hope to achieve with what our story.
Did you just recently play it, or did you play it when it came out?
I played it, not when it came out, at some point after it came out, but I remember it was one of those deals I saw on Xbox Live, and I'm like, I'm going to give this a try, and it was years ago, but it stuck with me.
Before the movie, Indie Game the Movie.
Before it was cool, yeah, definitely then. It was back when I was still in Chicago, yeah, so living in the old house in Romeoville. Yeah.
I just recently read... the first 5 issues of Mark Bernardin's comic Genius. It's a comic book named Genius. He's not a comic genius, although it's often funny, but it's about basically what if a military genius like a Hannibal or whatever was born in South Central LA and declared war on the police force.
Oh,
and it's really awesome.
That is fascinating. That I might have to check that out.
Yeah, I'll get some tips here.
All right, so why don't we,
hey, Kelly, what have you played or read or seen or anything?
Oh gosh,
it's hard.
Disco. Disco counts.
There's a lot of disco being consumed. Disco. The only thing I could think of consumed that had nothing to do with gaming was I just discovered some peppermint mocha iced coffee bought from the grocery store, and I'm going to have to get another one because I've been consuming a lot of it.
Yeah.
So, is that part of the two coffee quota for the day, or is that bonus?
Yeah, is this?
Yeah, it's funny because I didn't include that. I mostly thought of the hot coffee I have in the morning, and then the iced coffee for me comes in the afternoon. So I may not have included that.
I thought two cups was a little low for you.
Seeing all this coffee under the radar.
My shame.
Okay, so why don't we give you a couple minutes just to go over all the details of the campaign and let our listeners know, you know, where they can support it, where they can follow, where on social media, where they can sign up.
Absolutely. Okay, so summonersfate.com, the word summoner and the word fate together at last.com. That's where you can pretty much get gateway to everything. It's got our links for our Facebook, our Twitter, our devlogs, our Kickstarter is there. Yeah, that would be
the newsletter.
We have a newsletter there. Thank you. The newsletter, yes. Yeah. And we send those out bi-monthly.
Yeah, we just had one yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a good read. Kelly likes to make little comics that kind of preclude the newsletters, you know, keep you entertained.
Oh,
so
nice.
It's a different character, like the flesh golem. Oh, yeah. So we have, we're also doing a live stream on Kickstarter. That'll be on Friday.
Tomorrow, actually.
Although I don't know when this broadcast will go out, but if it's missing it, we'll probably definitely do a follow up. So stay posted for those so you can get in touch and talk with us face to face, because that's just a lot of fun.
Very cool. Very
we're
cool.
Just so entertaining.
We're fun. We have fun here. We have fun here.
Just all the coffee. I think
all the coffee.
Coffee and disco.
Coffee and disco. It's a
little fun. Any rewards that you want to Kickstarter rewards that are selling out that you want to direct people towards, or really cool stuff
Thank
that they
you.
Should get
Those
in on now?
Excellent points. Okay, so some of the big ones. I'm gonna start with the big ones because these are really, really cool. All right. So we have a reward called Fate Incarnate. It's $500, but let me talk you through this because it's really cool. You get to be in the game as a playable character.
Mm.
You get to design your character. So it's not just a portrait or a picture of you or you're a side character like that. You actually become a playable character, fully animated. You get to pick the weapons, the likeness. It can be you. It could be your girlfriend. It could be a creature or something
you come up with.
It could
be your pet.
It could be your pet. Yeah, it could be your pet. Their weapons, the backstory, all that fun stuff. You become a playable card, and then other players can collect you, which is kind of cool. And you get credit in the game as a game designer, and you also get all the other rewards below it. So that kind of just takes care of everything. You get to have. We've got another fun one is the Hellhound puppy. That was at 25, and it comes with the Orc Battle Barrel as well. So the Hellhound puppy lets you name the puppy, and it's an interesting story because there's the Hellhounds in the game are these really vicious creatures, you know, guardians of the underworld. But in our game, they have puppies, and the puppies themselves aren't vicious at all. They're just really, really cute and loyal little dogs. And they're really hard to find in the game. They're meant to be like a.
Check out the Hellhound puppy. It's adorable.
Yeah. There's a little animation of him. He's pretty cool.
He's pretty popular. People like to name him, and so we're giving people the opportunity to own him and then name it whatever they want.
Yeah, and that's a pretty low barrier.
People have been wanting to name him really bad.
that's a good one.
We'll definitely throw that out, the GIF up on the site so people can check out the adorableness.
Awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. He is pretty cute. He's cute. Yeah,
it's so helpful when a podcast comes with visual aids.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. You can become a new mascot. You know, that cute. You know, you can help you.
Okay, and then the Kickstarter runs until when?
I believe it's Friday. I want to say November 17th. We're going to just double check that.
Yeah, we have this thing open all the time, so here we are.
Yeah, Friday, November 17th at 10 a.m. Mountain Time.
All right.
Yes.
All right.
So for the Central folks, that would be 11. You should be there before 11 on Friday.
Exactly.
Don't miss out.
You know, the only other thing I was going to mention is we do have some really fun stretch goals as well. So we hope, you know, we're at about 88% right now of our goal. And as you know, I'm not sure exactly when this will air, but at this point we are, and you know, we're really hoping to bring forward some really fun stretch goals. Like we have our Celestial Timekeeper Rats. That, oh, steam, Celestial Timekeeper Steampunk Rats yeah. is our first stretch goal. And we think those go together quite well for people who like to play with time.
And rats.
Who enjoy steampunk and want to see this all together with the rat. Yeah. In a celestial kind of way. So anyway, so something to do for.
That's fantastic.
We like to have fun.
Yeah, the rats. Those would be... I want to see those rats.
Well, everyone cool. on the pod,
Ross and Kelly,
back from... so we can get those rats out.
Yeah, right. Come on, help us get
rats.
There. We need you guys. You want to see these things? They are amazing.
All right. Well, thank
Ross
you so
and Kelly,
much for
thank
taking
you
the
so
time.
Much for
we
having.
We know that you're yeah. you're super busy, but we're thank.
Our pleasure.
Absolutely, we're so honored to have been on your show. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure is ours.
Yeah, thank you guys.
So as always, I'm Kiwon Hong, at Kiwon Hong on Twitter. My game is Contract Work on Facebook as Contract Work Game.
And I'm Bobby Lockhart, at Bobby Locks with an X on Twitter. And my game is Codemancer, CodemancerGame.com.
And let me see if I can do this right. It's Shabilsky, right?
Nailed it!
Great. It was perfect. All right, guys.
Well done.
Thanks to everyone who listens, and go back Summoner's Fate. It's a great product, and we're excited to play it real soon. Thank you.